I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Jen Brister, Desiree Birch, Emma Siddy, Jake Yap, and this is...
The Noel Show!
Thank you very much. So, what do the following have in common? Trump, Putin's Russia, the EU Commission, the Brexiteers, Sky Cycling Team, and Arsenal Football Club.
They all want to win at all costs. Okay, apart from Arsenal. Yeah.
And Spurs. But everybody else seemed obsessed by it. First, Donald Trump announced tariffs on foreign steel and aluminium and claimed that...
trade wars are good and easy to win.
To which the EU's Donald Tusk quickly replied,
trade wars are bad and easy to lose.
While Jean-Claude Juncker threatened retaliation, saying,
we can also do stupid.
It's all a bit childish, isn't it? I mean, what next? Guy Verhofstadt grabs Trump's arm and shouts,
why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
Europe's threatened retaliatory tariffs on US products include Levi jeans, Harley Davidson motorbikes and bourbon whiskey.
Yes, which rather suggests the EU's plan is primarily to target people who are having a midlife crisis. Now, as many people have pointed out, this looming trade dispute is little more than tit for tat, which is not to be confused with tat for tit, which is where Trump tries to pay off a porn star with baseball caps and Trump steak vouchers. You see, it's all down to this desire to win at all costs. It's already cost Trump his economic advisor, Gary Cohn.
The good news is that 1.5 million jobs have been created in the US since Trump came to power.
And the bad news is 75% of them are in the White House. As his staff keep leaving, Hope Hicks, Steve Bannon, Rob Porter, Sean Spicer, Michael Flynn, Uncle Tom Cobley, Anthony Scaramucci, and Reince Priebus are just some of the people who have left. But the president has now hatched a plan to retain the staff.
I am going to build a wall.
But it's not just Trump. Everyone seems to want to win at all costs, as we can see from the effect on sport. This week, 2012 hero and all-round favourite Sir Bradley Wiggins was hit with drug allegations. And as if that wasn't bad enough, Philip Schofield introduced him onto the This Morning sofa as...
Sir Bradley Walsh!
Or, as the head of the anti-doping agency told him...
For you, the chase is over.
Which Wiggins fiercely denies, but there are questions that need answering. For example, there is no doubt that corticosteroids, in this case triamcinolone, can enhance performance. For a start, users are up to 90% more likely to be able to spell them.
Now, of course, it's also a bit of a blow to Team Sky, although it shouldn't affect their coverage.
The Tour de France, all the stages, live on Sky Tainted Sports 1, and on Sky Sports HD, highly dubious.
Now, an MP's report concluded that the team had not done anything technically illegal, but had...
crossed an ethical line.
But then again, sport did that long ago when it gave this year's World Cup to Russia, who, when they aren't dropping nerve agents on parts of Wiltshire, are allegedly engaging in what is invariably referred to as state-sponsored doping. They make this sound easy, but anyone who's done a sporting event will know that getting sponsored by anyone is harder than it looks.
Excuse me, next month I am running a half marathon to raise money to help develop unidentifiable performance-enhancing drugs. Could you sponsor me? If you do, I will win gold medal for Motherland.
Very well. Can I give you cash?
Yes, or if you prefer, you can go to my page on justcheating.com.
But the outrage in Salisbury may bring about changes. Boris Johnson is threatening that we might boycott the World Cup, although we will, as usual, be boycotting it after the second round anyway. And he doesn't want any British dignitaries to attend.
Yes, that's true, although when he was reminded that gangs of violent Russian ultras were likely to target away fans, he suggested Michael Gove could perhaps go after all. We're very keen on winning at all costs ourselves, of course, which is why post-Brexit we need all the trade deals we can get. And this week we rolled out the red carpet for Saudi Arabia's Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is so keen to change our image of his country that he spent £1 million on advertising hoardings along his route. So at the very least, his visit can be turned into an Oscar-nominated movie. 50 billboards outside Heathrow Terminal 3. Prince bin Salman paid to have his message...
bringing change to Saudi Arabia.
...plastered across the side of taxis and vans, clearly not realising the British public are now wary of any promise written on the side of a large vehicle.
But it's all part of Britain's quest to win at Brexit, despite the misgivings of some. One of them, supposedly, is the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, who got into trouble with Number 10 this week because he was asked to choose a favourite childhood book for World Book Day and chose 1984.
Yes, and someone from Theresa May's office came round and put his head in a rat's cage and persuaded him to change it. And he changed it to something by Dr. Seuss. But to be honest, when it comes to Brexit, I'm not really sure that's any better.
I do not like green eggs and ham.
Then don't let them sit in a traffic jam. Don't let them sit 3 days at Dover, as they might once Brexit's over.
Will they go off in a lorry?
We need to check their origin. Sorry, you'll have to stop your truck and park it now you've left the single market.
I do not like green eggs and ham.
I'm sorry, mate, I really am.
Can I put them on a train?
You cannot put them on a train. You cannot put them on a truck.
Or on an aeroplane.
Bad luck.
I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Brussels man. These eggs and ham cannot afford a long wait queuing at the border.
Excuse me, but I do believe that it was you that chose to leave to quit the customs union too. The red lines are all down to you. Forgive me, but could it be true you didn't really think this through?
I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Brussels man. They said we'd get the exact same deal.
It was never likely, sir, I feel. Who promised things so cavalier?
Why, Boris did.
Just as I feared. They made it all sound very easy. Now I guess you're feeling queasy. Year to go, so much to do. It might be fine. You might pull through. Just look around the world you're in.
Trade wars are good and easy to win.
And who needs France and Germany too when you've got Kazakhstan and Timbuktu?
I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Brussels man.
This poem makes it sound not great, you know. I'd stick with Orwell, mate. So, please welcome to this stage, for the first time, a writer, actor and comedian who has written and performed no less than 5 solo shows all across the globe. It's Jen Brister.
So, it was International Women's Day yesterday. I don't know about you, but I'm still celebrating. Yesterday, I binged on 14 hours of Woman's Hour, got an Emmeline Pankhurst tattoo and fantasised about being Jane Garvey's best friend. I've got every intention of stretching this out for as long as I can, not least because I know it upsets all the right people.
What about men? Why do we even need an International Women's Day? This is feminism gone mad!
Yes, thank you, Dad. Talking of dads, can you imagine being Jacob Rees-Mogg's only daughter? Oh, that poor girl needs to know there's more to life than embroidery, learning Latin and playing the harpsichord in a 16th century folly. There's still so much for women in the 21st century to have to contend with. All the stuff we're supposed to care about, like the thigh gap. I couldn't care less if my thighs rubbed together. Frankly, if like me you've been in a relationship for more than 10 years, then you're happy if anything's rubbing down there. Forget the thigh gap. It's the gender pay gap we should be railing against. We've had the Equal Pay Act of 1970, the Sex Discrimination Act of 1975. Yes, Jacob, that did happen. The Disability Discrimination Act of 95, and now the Equality Act of 2010. And you won't be surprised to hear that we're still not getting paid the same money. It almost feels like society has been telling women that we should be grateful.
You got a job. You can vote. We're not allowed to touch your boobs in public anymore. Now, put your knickers on and make us a cup of tea. What are you moaning about?
I'm moaning about my piece of the pie, mate. I don't want 5% or 10% or even 25%. I want 50% of the pie because I've earned it. And I'm not a token or a one-off or an anomaly. I'm a woman. And women make up 51% of the population. Yeah, that's right, fellas. There's more of us. So hand over my piece of the pie. You know that bit of your pie with the extra crust that you didn't earn? Yeah, it's called the bell end bonus. And I can't believe I'm saying this as a gay woman, but I want that pristine portion of privileged penis premium, and I want to be chowing down on your slice of pie. Sorry, not your slice of pie, my slice of pie, because it's not yours, it never was yours, it's always been mine, and you're not handing over a piece of your pie, you're handing back my piece of pie that you took from me. Yay! I tell you another thing that we've had to contend with, ageing, hey? Not just getting older, but all the hormone issues that come with it. I'm only 43, but I am deep in perimenopause. I'm currently experiencing hot flushes, and I feel moody 90% of the time. Do you remember that woman that put a cat in a bin for what seemed like no reason at all? Do you remember that? Everyone was up in arms. How could she put a cat in a bin? She's so cruel. I'm sorry, but I completely get it now. Did that cat just give me the side eye? Right, you're going in the bin, mate. Women are still being punished for the cardinal sin of aging naturally. Big shout out to Miriam O'Reilly. Particularly on television or film, where women are expected to laminate their faces, iron their necks, and pluck every bit of hair from their bodies. Have you tried epilating your back? It's next to impossible. Meanwhile, men on TV are allowed the greatest privilege of all, which is to resemble a craggy, dishevelled and hairier version of Gollum. Big shout out to Jeremy Clarkson. Seriously, don't watch him on HD. There's 51% of us, but women are still not evenly represented in business, the arts or the judiciary. Look at what's happening with the BBC. I'm assuming the term auntie's ironic. Joking aside, the BBC have finally given us a female Doctor Who. And apparently, she's on the same pay as a male doctor. It's just unfortunate that they chose Tom Baker from 1978. Just kidding. It was William Hartnell. Wouldn't it be great if we found out in the first episode that the Doctor's biggest enemy isn't the Daleks or the Cybermen, it's the glass ceiling?
Doctor, where the hell are you going?
Well, Bradley, I'm going to ram this TARDIS straight through that glass ceiling so I can get my piece of the pie back.
But Doctor, are you sure? You know, you're probably going to be a bloke again in a couple of years.
I've lived for over 2,000 years and not all of them were good. I've made many mistakes and it's about time I did something about that. I am and always will be the optimist, the hoper of far-flung hopes and dreamer of improbable dreams. Now, Bradley, get your knickers on and make me a cup of tea. I've got a glass ceiling to smash.
And you better not ask her to sweep up afterwards.
Jen Brister. So as this weekend sees the start of the Winter Paralympics, we thought we should talk to someone about it. And who better to talk to than someone who has herself won an extraordinary 11 gold medals over 5 Paralympic Games.
Please welcome to the stage, member of the House of Lords, decorated Paralympic athlete, Baroness Tanny Gray Thompson.
So thank you so much for coming. It's very difficult to know how to address you, actually, because you were a dame.
Yes.
And now you're a baroness. So what is your full title?
Okay, it is the Right Honourable, the Baroness Caris Davina, commonly known as Tanny, Grey Thompson, DBE, DL of Eaglescliffe in the County of Durham. Tanny.
We'll have to call you Tanny, girl. We'll run out of time.
Yeah. Is that okay?
So, are you going to go to the Winter Paralympics? Are you going to visit?
No, I'm staying at home. I don't really like the cold weather.
Yeah,
so, me and Winter Games. No, I'm a fan. I'll watch at home.
Do you know, actually, you've got other people doing exactly the same thing. I found this today on the Channel 4 website. I found it hysterically funny. It says, Channel 4 will broadcast 100 hours of coverage from the Pyeongchang 2018 Paralympic Winter Games. Claire Balding will lead a team from Channel 4's specially purpose-built broadcast centre at the Snow Centre, Hemel Hempstead. You're in very good company. But so, with your, you know, dislike of the cold, was winter sport ever an option for you rather than wheelchair racing?
Many, many years ago, I was asked, would I like to have a go at speed skating? Because it's actually very similar to wheelchair racing. And they said to me, we've got this amazing piece of kit. So I went to the local ice rink in Cardiff, and it was basically 4 bits of metal welded together with a broken plastic chair on it. And I decided that it probably wasn't for me.
So you opted for wheelchair racing?
Because I was useless at everything else, to be honest.
Well, I can't believe that to be true at all, because at wheelchair racing you won 11 Paralympic golds, 4 silver, 1 bronze, 13 world championship medals, but interestingly they're all at short distances, up to 800 metres. But in addition to that, you won the London Marathon wheelchair race 6 times between 1992 and 2002. So essentially that is going to your competitors, come on, whatever distance you want. I'll do it backwards. I'll go backwards. You go forwards. I'll do it on one wheel. I'll still beat you. I will still beat you. So my question really is, do you like winning?
Yes. I would like to say I was special, but everyone in wheelchair racing does a whole range of distances. And to be fair, the marathon, the hardest bit's the first 26 miles. Yeah. Once I'm in the sprint, I'm all right, but I just need to be in the sprint.
But if you have a breakdown, not an emotional breakdown, if you have a breakdown, if you have a puncture, for example, what happens?
No, so you're not allowed any assistance. You have to carry your tyre, your spare pump. And there was one London Marathon where I had a puncture, and it was right by the St John's Ambulance Station, and I was struggling to get my tyre off. So I asked this lovely young man from St John's Ambulance, could I have his scissors to try and cut my tyre off? And he said to me, this is a St John's Ambulance scissors. You need to be trained to use it. And I think I just went, give me the scissors. And I was, sorry, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah.
But Paralympic sport is an amazing story of people overcoming impairment. But do you think that Paralympic sport is heading the way of most professional sport? Will it be tainted in some way by doping? Is it because it's becoming more competitive, isn't it?
I think sport is a real challenge because people will try and push the boundaries as much as they can. So actually it's about trying to stop it before it becomes a real problem, because the nature of sport is people want to be really good. And it's about countries, it's about winning medals, you know, it's about being top of the medal table. So, you know, those things are important to a lot of people.
Have you had doping checks?
Oh, yeah. It's horrible.
What happens?
So, as an athlete, you're told if you're approached to do a test, you have to take a member of the British team in with you, a coach or a member of staff, to oversee it to make sure the test is done correctly. I was in Stuttgart, 93, won a bronze medal. Somebody approached me and said, come with me now. And they started taking me off down a corridor. It said, doping control. So I said, I'm not going without my coach. It all got a bit messy. They started trying to pull my wheelchair. I grabbed hold of the door and I'm screaming, you know, I need my coach. So they get my coach, he comes. And actually, they were taking me in to get my makeup done for the medal ceremony. And I kind of just sat there and let this woman put the most horrific green eyeshadow on me and purple lipstick. I just looked like I was going out clubbing. And then I just shut up. It was awful. Now everyone knows.
Hardly anybody listens to this programme. Since you've left competitive sport, you've carried on with this sort of amazing career. You've done an enormous number of things. If you are as competitive and as good at sport as you were, what happens to that competitive instinct once you leave? Do you find an outlet for it?
Probably politics, actually. It's kind of fairly similar, actually. It's just fine. You're a long time retired from sport, so you have to find other things
but
to do.
But do you ever see, you know, another member of the House of Lords heading for the bench and think, I'm going to get there before you, mate? You ever do that? Do you race them?
I do occasionally get colleagues say to me when I'm late, it's not a race, you know, and go, yeah.
What if it's Sebastian Coe? You beat him.
I'll give it a good go.
Thank you very much indeed. Tanny Gray Thompson.
Thank you so much.
So, please welcome to the stage a writer, action comedian who won an award for a poster of her face depicted in what can only be described as a penis collage. It's Desiree Birch.
This week, Public Health England announced it's time for Britain to go on a diet. In front of Britain and all of its friends. Wow. That is worse than that time that Belgium came to pick you up on a date and your dad said, she's just upstairs waxing her Cornwall. Hey, Britain, hey, your country's so fat, you gotta renegotiate your borders just to get into bed. Your country is so fat, the Channel Islands hang out near France just so you don't eat them. Your country is so fat, they had to get a fat American to tell you that you are fat. Because they didn't think you'd be able to see anyone smaller through the haze of your own meat sweats. Congratulations, Britannia. You've joined the big girls club alongside global superpowers like the US, Australia, Canada, and Germany, who are among some of the most fattest nations in the world, bulging at the seams with success. Come to the dark side, Britain. Switch to sweatpants. They're like tracksuits, but without the brand label, so you don't have to watch them expand as you get more successful. Now, I know that this is not the first time that Britain has heard this news. There seem to be these annual reports about the NHS straining under the weight of Britain's obesity problem, buckling under the pressure from patients with diabetes, groaning under Britain's massive load. Okay, that last one never got printed for obvious reasons. But what is different this time is that Public Health England are working with representatives at number 10 to take a more active role in your weight loss, cracking down on foods like pizzas, ready meals, and takeaways, and requiring businesses like Tesco and Greggs to reduce the calorie counts of their foods by 20% over the next 6 years. To be fair, supermarkets could accomplish this in their pre-made sandwiches by removing the exorbitant amounts of mayonnaise that mask the distinct lack of flavor. The government will also be proposing limits to portion sizes and curbing junk food advertising to children. Obviously, these foods will still advertise, but placements during children's programming will be limited and may incorporate some minor changes. I'm loving it has the same number of syllables as a heart attack, so it's an easy switch. While the maximum recommended calorie intake is 2,000 calories for women and 2,500 calories for men, Public Health England recommended diet for Britain that is 400, 600, 600 calories across breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The public seemed to be behind these initiatives. We spoke to one woman who works as a personal chef.
I just think if the government made it easier for people to understand the calories within their meals, then yes, it would be practical.
And isn't that exactly what governments are for when you can't rely on people knowing stuff? I mean, honestly, if I had Boris Johnson in my refrigerator slapping my wrist every time I reach for cake, I'd eat a lot less cake. Plus, that's Boris Johnson sorted. So what does a 400-calorie breakfast look like? Well, not exactly your full English. Just two fried eggs and all the canned tomatoes you can flick off your plate. Now, my question is, how will this affect the British way of life? Four beers in an evening and you've drunk your dinner. An order of chips on the night bus home means you've more than doubled that, meaning you actually have to get into a fist fight just for the cardio. Whoa, I am starting to understand a lot more about your culture now. Public Health England recommends starting your day with a slice of avocado toast. Congratulations, millennials. You finally managed not to screw one thing up for once. Sure, you won't ever be able to afford a house, but you'll stay slim enough to shimmy through that maisonette you'll be renting until the day you die. Obviously, preparing your own meals is the best way to control calorific intake, but the average working Briton is short on both money and time, with some not seeing the cost-benefit ratio working in their favor.
I don't think that cooking makes it any healthier. I just think it makes it more arduous and longer.
When asked where this man on the go gets his daily nutrition, he replied,
"Ready meals? Well, I mean, I don't really eat, but yeah."
So, not an eater, that guy. Just the occasional ready meal while he works on his new app that puts extra kitten ears on existing photos of kittens. While it's clear that the average working person is short on money and short on time, we asked another young woman who also works as a personal chef. Okay, how do you guys have this many personal chefs in your country and you still can't figure out how to not ruin a sandwich? All right. We asked her how she thought Britain would fare on the new diet.
It is doable, but I don't think it's practical. If you've got a busy life, it's not always possible to concentrate on what you're eating and the calories that you've been taking.
Just as I'm sure it's also probably not practical to institute a living wage that might provide working families with the means to buy more nutritional grocery items for their meals, as well as possibly allowing them more available time to plan and prepare those meals, the result of which might be a reduction in emotional eating as a coping mechanism and the sleeplessness and stress that increase cortisol levels and cause visceral weight gain. But yeah, there really seem to be no practical solutions here. Besides, using that mayonnaise to grease yourself into your new tracksuit. It is your destiny.
Desiree Birchstar.
Now, Henry Bolton, OBE, began his political career with the Lib Dems in 2005 and has since then just gone up and up a certain creek. After losing his leadership of UKIP following racist comments made by Jo Marnie, his girlfriend, not girlfriend, OK girlfriend... He has recently announced the formation of a new party called One Nation. He says it's based on the political philosophy of Benjamin Disraeli, who understood white van man better than any Victorian. Realising just how powerful the medium of song can be after Mike Read's highly successful UKIP Calypso, here is Henry Bolton with his One Nation reggae song. Pray for us and pray for Jake Yap.
A new integration into one nation. Political constipation. Hippodipidation. One nation gonna make it, I really. Finally a party that's a little bit maturer. Although I should be clear, it's One Nation by Disraeli, not One Nation, One People, One Führer. Meet Disraelites. Yes, come on. That's right. Benjamin woke up this morning to get the party started. One Nation gonna sort out this mess. But now my girl has got me downhearted. Somebody leaked her messages to national press, and I'm like,
Joe,
you can't say that. Folk stone is Babylon. Proud to be British, proud of me career, proud of me service and me OBE. Joe, was there something you wanted to add here?
Meghan Markle's seed will take the royal family.
Shut up, Joe! Oh, not again. Me Disraeliites. It's not about Joe money, money, money. I don't care about Joe money, money. Only joking, darling. Let's be clear, this is an important new party for Britain that will definitely work. Not like For Britain, the party Anne-Marie Waters set up when she lost the UKIP leadership election, or the Democrats and Veterans Party set up by Jonathan Rhys-Evans when he lost the UKIP leadership election, and after he claimed his horse had been raped by a gay donkey. Join today, and I will, in the name of Jar, dump my girlfriend just to make Britain great. Because when she says,
this is Britain, not Africa.
Haile Selassie? No, highly inappropriate. Mid Israelite. Oh, wibbity, wibbity, wibbity bong. There is nothing wrong with that.
Now, you probably saw this week that Alexa has been randomly laughing and freaking people out, and also that a woman in China found that her two-year-old had inadvertently locked her out of her iPhone for 48 years. So we have asked our audience whether they've ever found technology that seems to have it in for them.
Have you ever found that technology seems to have it in for you? Very simple answer. My toaster hates me. The next one, have you ever found that technology seems to have it in for you? The answer, the toaster hates my husband.
I like this one, because I really want to think that this is true. It says, not at the moment, but I say please and thank you to Alexa in case there's a Terminator-style uprising.
My dishwasher, 5'9", bearded male, doesn't work.
Have you ever found technology seems to have it in for you? Yes, my bathroom scales have been lying to me for 48 years. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you much indeed for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Jen Brister, Desiree Birch, Emma Siddy, Jake Yap, and Baroness Tanny Gray Thompson. It was written by the cast with additional material for Ed Anston, Tom Coles, Tom Neenan, Emma Cahill, and Laura Major. The producer was Matt Strong. It was a BBC Studios production.